When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A few weeks ago, I was happy to learn that the House Select Subcommittee investigating the coronavirus pandemic had finally issued a subpoena for former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo to appear for questioning over his failure to cooperate with a probe into New York State's COVID-19 nursing home policies. As many of you know, I have been fighting for 4 years when it comes to the truth and accountability into the deadly decisions that I believe helped kill thousands of seniors here in New York in the spring of 2020, including my husband's parents. March 25th is the fourth anniversary of the executive order that was issued by Cuomo and his health department to dump over 9,000 COVID-positive patients into senior facilities without being able to test them. The House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic chairperson, Brad Wenstrup, along with Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis from New York, have both been very helpful to my family and thousands of others when it comes to trying to find truth and accountability for what happened here in New York in 2020. And in light of the news of a subpoena to question Andrew Cuomo and the anniversary of the March 25th order, they agreed to come on the podcast to talk about their work and the next steps to hopefully finding answers for all of us. I am so grateful to have you on the program. This is the four-year anniversary of the March 25th order that went into effect. Andrew Cuomo and his administration for 46 days decided to put 9,000 COVID-positive patients into nursing homes where our most elderly resided, including my husband's parents. I've been very vocal. I've been an advocate since then. And so far, you seem to be my only hope. So I want to thank you, first of all, for being so dogged with this investigation. And Chairman Wenstrup, I want to talk to you about the subpoena that was issued to Andrew Cuomo. What went into that? And what are the steps to get there?
Yeah, there's actually many steps that it takes to get there, because you can't just say we're going to issue a subpoena. You have to go and act in good faith, both sides. Unfortunately, the other side really didn't seem to be. That's why General Counsel allowed us to issue a subpoena, because we went several times to Mr. Cuomo and his team. They would delay us. They were not making legitimate efforts to try and respond to us. Sometimes it would take weeks before they'd even answer an email. They would ignore attempts to negotiate interview dates and times. And then what they finally did is said, well, we'll come in August. Well, this committee only runs until the end of this term.
They know that.
And it's not like he has a job to go to right now. He may have other lawsuits pending. I don't know about his legal issues, and he can probably hire more than one lawyer. So we finally went to General Counsel and said, look, here's all the times we have made every attempt. Here are their responses. It was very clear that they're just trying to delay and ignore us, and they've done it for 9 months. And so now we have a subpoena date of May 24th.
And so then what happens? Will he show up?
Yeah. So instead of being a transcribed interview, it's now a deposition. I would hope that he shows up. You know, he's not doing things that help make his case if he thinks he even has a case, which, as you look at this more and more, it doesn't make much sense to say that this is even defendable. Maybe that's why they don't want to come in, because the conduct that they went forward with and the must admit order, it was actually against CDC guidance and CMS guidance. And he issued an order that was completely juxtaposed to what they put out. He was actually telling people you must admit patients coming from the hospital. And they would use clever terms now, like we admitted recovering COVID patients. Well, they weren't COVID negative. Yes. They didn't test negative. And actually, the what looks like the order he put out prohibited from even testing
That's
someone.
Right.
I almost get the impression, Janice, that, you know, unfortunately, as we all know too well, many people died from this. And I think he just didn't want them dying in his hospital. But what made it even worse is that he put him in places where it infected other people very clearly. I can tell you as a physician, you do not take highly contagious people with infections and put them around vulnerable people that can catch that infection and in this case be subject to death. I treat a lot of infections in my career. This goes against all medicine. So who gave him this advice and why? I haven't seen anyone come forward yet that has MD after their name. Maybe Howard Zucker might have some answers for us. But it just doesn't make any sense. And I think any physician would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And Congresswoman Maliotakis, I was talking to you earlier before we went to air, and I was talking about Governor Kathy Hochul, who was part of Cuomo's administration. She was his lieutenant governor. She puts out this statement that I read that said, March 14th is a solemn day in our history. 4 years ago today, New York recorded its first COVID-19 death. We remember the friends, the family members, the loved ones we lost to the virus, and recognize the heroic frontline workers who worked tirelessly to keep us safe. And it makes my blood boil, because she said to our faces several years ago that she wanted to get to the bottom of what happened. And she wanted an investigation, and she wanted a review of what happened under her administration in New York. And she sends out a little tweet like that, and it's so disgraceful, especially to families who she's promised. And there is supposed to be an investigation, but I think we paid $4 million for it, and it's a company out of Virginia that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, but we know that both Andrew Cuomo and Kathy Hochul are people that just throw words out there and then they don't follow it up with action. I mean, for example, Governor Cuomo was the one who kept saying that our most vulnerable are the seniors.
Yes.
In fact, the day before he issued this March 25th directive, he said, you know, my mother's not expendable, your mother's not expendable. And then the very next day, he issues that executive order that allowed for COVID positive patients to go into nursing homes. Not just allowed it, it actually mandated it. And the nursing homes right away were saying, we don't have the PPE, we don't have the staffing, we don't have the ability to separate the COVID positives from the, you know, to isolate them. And so it was a deadly executive order, and it was done not in compliance with CDC or federal guidance. And it was not in compliance with common sense, right? That we knew our elderly were the most vulnerable. What really strikes me is that even after there were alternatives set up, remember, President Trump sent New York the U.S. Navy comfort ship. In Staten Island, for example, we had South Beach Psychiatric Center was turned into a makeshift hospital. We had the New York Javits Center that was taken over to care for positive patients. They didn't use any of it. They didn't use it. They spent millions of dollars to set these things up, and then they didn't even use them, or they used them very minimally. And instead continued to put positive patients in nursing homes without seniors. And that's why we saw more deaths than any other state when it comes to our senior population.
Mm-hmm. In March, a couple of weeks ago, New Jersey issued a review. It was a 907-page report released on March 7th that focused on what the state had done to prepare for a potential public health emergency and the government's efforts to manage the crisis. And it was pretty critical. And I have to say, I commend Governor Murphy for doing something like that, because at least there is something in there that said they failed to have an adequate response to COVID-19. And New Jersey also put COVID positive patients into nursing homes. We had incredible numbers of dead in the veterans' homes, which of course made headlines because there were lawsuits and there was millions of dollars that was settled in those lawsuits when it comes to the veterans and the COVID positive patients that they put into their homes. So, and New Jersey is the only state that has so far done something like this. Chairman, why do you think it's important for each state to take a look at the COVID response?
Well, I think it's important because each state did some things differently.
Yes.
And so we want to know what worked and what didn't work. The whole premise of this committee, subcommittee, is an after action review of everything that was done during the pandemic, including bills that Congress passed, the effects of lockdowns, school closures. But we want to have some lessons learned so that we don't repeat the same mistakes. And so that is key. And every state should do that and really take a good look into the mirror. Look, this was a novel virus. I get that. And so there were a lot of things that we just did on guessing because we didn't have tests. We didn't have definitive treatments. No one was quite sure what to do. That's fair enough. But when you have information and when there are common sense rules and guidelines of medicine to follow, you need to make sure you're following it. So I credit New Jersey for saying where they may have failed. And that's the only way we can look forward. But the New York situation is even worse because they were selectively reporting statistics, and the New York State Assembly, their judiciary, did the study on this, and so they were trying to lower the number. This is an after action review. We got to look at how they were reporting, and what I'm also disappointed in now is working with the Cuomo team. In my opinion, very unprofessional. Now they're down to name calling and doing things like that. Well, that tells you something right there. But we're going to continue to be professional, drive on, and do everything that we can. And the country is looking at Governor Cuomo and his team and how they're responding. And I don't think he's fooling anybody.
Well, and the difference between him and the other governors is he was, you know, he was a celebrity. He was on every day with his fireside chats. And then he had his $5.2 million book. That was released. And I believe, in my own humble opinion, that he wanted to fudge the numbers to make him look like a hero so that he didn't lose all of these seniors in nursing homes so he could get his $5.2 million book deal. And then he had an Emmy Award. So that was the difference between him and, say, Governor Murphy. Listen, Governor Murphy had a lot of mistakes, no question. And there were other governors that put COVID positive patients into nursing homes, whereas Cuomo continued to pile them in. 9,000, over 9,000 sick patients were put into nursing homes for 46 days. He didn't shut it down. And that's, I want to know why. Why did he wait so long?
We want to know why also. And I feel for Nicole being in New York to having to sit there and endure all of that firsthand in her home state. You know, we were kind of getting it in a delayed reaction around the rest of the country. But she may want to comment on the mood of New Yorkers during that process.
Yes, please do.
Well, look, I think it was, I remember just people being shocked that he issued this order and it didn't make sense. And what made it worse, I think, was the fact that the nursing homes were begging for supplies. They were begging for PPE. I mean, I remember personally going to the nursing homes in my district with whatever supplies I can get my hands on gloves, on gowns, on hand sanitizer, and giving them, and we delivered thousands and thousands of supplies because they weren't getting them from the state. So that made the order even more reckless. You forced nursing homes to take positive patients knowing that the nursing homes were actually screaming for help and they couldn't do this. So when Governor Cuomo comes in, I mean, certainly I also want to know who advised this. What were the communications leading up to this decision? Why did they fly in the face of what the CDC was recommending? Also, why did they use common sense here? And when the alternatives were set up, why didn't they use them? They should have rescinded that order immediately, used the alternative sites, and at least that would have minimized the damage of what was done. And also, I want to look into the reimbursement. I've been saying this for quite some time, difficulty getting the data, but was there a difference in reimbursements in pay if a patient was in the hospital versus a nursing home? Did that play a factor? Were they trying to save money or maybe make money? I think that was a question that we all want to know the answer of as well. And then obviously the cover up, right? The reporting of it. When did he know that these numbers were wrong? Why did they correct it? But I think you're right. We saw other governors take responsibility. If he had come out and said, I made a mistake, I take responsibility. You know, we can't say that the buck stops here. And then when something like this happens, you don't want to take any responsibility for the decisions and the directives that you and your administration put in place. So, look, I thank you, Janice, because you've been out there. You've been pushing this issue. You've been keeping it under the spotlight. It's one of the reasons why we're so focused and dedicated, because we want to help families like yours and the thousands of New Yorkers who lost loved ones because of stupid policies that really made absolutely no sense and were contradictory. So we're gonna continue to fight to get this, you know, these answers and accountability that you guys deserve.
Mm-hmm. Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Chairman, what are the next steps? So you get, hopefully, Mr. Cuomo in, and you ask him questions, and then what happens after that?
Well, first, before, during, and after we get Governor Cuomo in, we're going to continue to move forward in the investigation. We've reached out to many individuals that were part of the special counsel to the governor on the COVID-19 task force, Melissa DeRosa, the former secretary in New York, but also many. We got about 5 or 6 people that were part of the team in some way, shape, or form. And also, we need to see internal documents. One of the things that we found through the pandemic, and I'll just give you an example, as those scientists that were weighing in on the origins of COVID, they were saying one thing publicly, but another thing privately. And when we got their internal documents, it revealed that. And so there's a lot of questions still need to be answered there. And although we've talked to some of these people, we didn't have all those internal documents when we spoke to them. So we'll be bringing them back in some way, shape, or form to discuss that. But that's where we're going moving forward. We will have to be very firm about this subpoena and make sure that the governor comes in and answers questions. It's a moral responsibility that he should have. And I think the American people get that. And it would be really nice if New Yorkers spoke up loud and clear, and thank you for the opportunity to be with you today, but loud and clear that, yeah, Governor, you need to answer the questions and Congress is calling on you to answer them.
I really think that he thinks he's above the law. I really do. I think, you know, we saw it during COVID. He really, he took over the reins. He said, everything that we've ever known before this, forget about it. I'm the leader here. I'm the king of New York, and I'm going to make the decisions. You know, in the New Jersey report I was reading, that the health department had a pandemic influenza plan in 2015 that was accurate in predicting what would happen during COVID. And it says here, quote, it wasn't widely known within the senior state leadership at the time that they had this plan. My husband's a fireman. He told me they had a pandemic plan, and all of that went out the window with Cuomo saying, nope, I'm making the rules and regulations right now, and the buck does stop with me, and I don't care what you say.
I think that was the issue that we saw with a lot of the Democrats just running these states. They took the opportunity to seize power. We saw that with Bill de Blasio with all his different mandates, shutting down businesses, shutting down livelihoods, shutting down schools for extended periods of time. And that's all what our committee has been investigating and making sure that we put forward recommendations that these things don't happen again, because it was so hurtful for so many different people, particularly our youth who were, you know, mental health issues, yes. Just educate. They're so far behind now. They're still trying to catch up. There has to be certain parameters put in place. So these abuses that we saw, these power hungry politicians in cities and states like mine in New York that didn't care about people's livelihoods or their lives. In many ways, right? They were trying to, in some ways, protect them, but they went so far that they've actually did much more damage to them, these people, financially and economically and mentally.
Yes. Yes. I mean, we have to remember that. Our children were affected. Schools were closed. Our most vulnerable kids, you know, that need schools to get away from abusive environments, you know, to get their food in the morning. I mean, they didn't have that. It's going to take years and years to know the damage for our children. And then you talk about the first responders.
because I mentioned my husband as a first responder. He was told he had to get the vaccine and the booster and all of that, and people were fired. They lost their jobs. And it's important to remember that. I feel like some people just want to put blinders on and go forward and say, oh, okay, well, you know, whatever, I got to concentrate on today. Well, we can't do that. So much damage was done to livelihoods and lives. And that's why I think it's so important. Your work is so important that you're doing. What do you want to see about, you know, out of this subcommittee and out of our government going forward?
Well, I think we want to come up with a plan for the future on how we deal with a future pandemic. How number one, can we prevent one, right? I think that's really important. And, you know, we've met with the World Health Organization and various partners in NATO to try to address that. The supply chain issues, making sure that we're prepared. You know, right now we are short about 250 prescription drugs that are so critical, antibiotics, chemotherapies. And the chairman and I talk about that regularly, the need to develop legislation, which we're working with our Ways and Means Committee, to incentivize manufacturing here at home, or trade policies where we can get some of this, the APIs from our, which is the pharmaceutical ingredients, from our allies versus depending on communist China for 70% of those APIs. We have to be mindful of all of that. And then, of course, shedding light on how these ridiculous policies, these, you know, Cuomo made us dance in boxes, for God's sakes, when he started. Oh, I mean, you have a picture of me and Chaz Palminteri dancing in a box the first time they opened up. I mean, look what they did, made these catering halls and these businesses do. And how many of these businesses shut down completely because of these arbitrary, just not based on science rules. So highlighting all of that and the ridiculousness of it. What worked, what didn't work? I mean, that's really the lessons learned. How can we prepare for the future, make sure we can prevent where we can a pandemic? Also, we need to have some type of international guidelines as it relates to lab safety. You know, our committee, many of us believe that this was from a lab leak. Okay, that's what the science is telling us. That's what actually, you know, Department of Energy and FBI and others have indicated in their research. How do we make sure that we're not funding any of this research in the future, number one? And then how does AI come into play in the development of vaccinations so we don't have to do this gain of function research? So it's all of that. I mean, it's a lot. It's a very broad look that we're taking into, and it's also very detailed because we're getting into the specifics on all of these issues.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Winstrup, you mentioned DeRosa, and I know there are other people that you've called in to answer questions. Has she been, you know, taking your phone calls?
She was very resistant at first. She started off by saying she had nothing to do with this, and so there's no reason for her to come in. I'm paraphrasing that a little bit, but not very much. Yet, if you read her book, she's deeply involved. And so, again, another person that's fighting it. And I'd also be curious to see how much she's communicating with Governor Cuomo at this time. I do want to say Nicole just did a phenomenal job of pointing out all the things that we're trying to do. And I just want to add one more thing to that. And that is government messaging. You know, there was absolutely no bedside manner. And that's because we weren't hearing from the doctors that were treating COVID patients. And I recommended that to Secretary Azar. And I carried on to the next administration. You know, we should have been hearing from the doctors treating COVID patients, telling us what's going on, who's dying, who's getting sick, who's getting well. And then you have, you know, politicians and people from the lab, you know, telling America what to do. When we had Dr. Fauci and we asked him where the 6 feet of distancing came from, he said it just sort of appeared. When we asked about the masking, he said, no, there was no scientific study. You know, Americans want to be educated, not just indoctrinated. And the mandate was the perfect example of taking the doctor out of the equation. No one is going to treat you better than the doctor that sits with you and looks you in the eye and can discuss your particular health. And so we're looking at better reporting systems, you know, to make sure that when there's adverse events to vaccines or what is actually happening and who is actually getting sick and dying, that we're accurate with it. I pointed out that when the government comes out and says these vaccines are safe and effective, what America hears is, 100% safe and effective when we know that they're not, because we knew from the trials that, yes, we saved hundreds of thousands of lives with the vaccine, especially for those that were most vulnerable. No doubt about it. But you could still get COVID, and you could get it to varying degrees. And people that were vaccinated still got COVID, and some still died. But there were a lot of reasons for that. We just did a horrible job of being upfront and honest. And when you have a political presidential race going on, and Kamala Harris says, you know, she's not taking the vaccine if Donald Trump administration is behind it, and then they're first in line, and then her team, their administration, puts out a mandate that you must take it. What do you think happens in America? We are divided, and now it becomes political rather than just a medical issue. Mm.
You talk about divided. Congresswoman Maliotakis, do we have bipartisan support on your subcommittee? Do you have, you know, do people come up to you from the other side and say, we want answers too?
Well, first of all, because I've been on this committee since the inception, and I'll tell you that it was very frustrating for us because they would not hold any hearings that would have made the Biden administration or the Cuomo administration look bad. So
Under the Democrats.
That's right. Yeah. Under the Democrats when they were in charge my first term. So it was really frustrating because they were having all these hearings, but none of them ever got to the bottom of what happened here. And it wasn't until Chairman Wenstrup and the Republicans took control of the House that we were able to do substantive hearings. That's why we lost so much time. Mm-hmm. On some issues like supply chain, on wanting to prevent the next one, they do also want answers. They also want to make sure we're prepared. But when it comes to the origins, I mean, they did not do a hearing on origins the entire first 2 years of this committee, which is absolutely ludicrous. Ludicrous. Every time we do a hearing, they always want to try to, you know, blame the Trump administration for something as opposed to being serious about what happened here. So I found that to be very frustrating. But I'm much more pleased that we are doing serious work and that we're going to be putting together this report with recommendations and findings, facts, answers that people deserve, so how we can move forward. And hopefully we'll see some accountability. Obviously, we have to see where this leads, right? We're going to have Governor Cuomo come in. We have to see what exactly we can extract from him and then see where it goes from there. We're not predetermining anything. We're not predetermining some type of response. We're just wanting to learn, find the truth. That's really, I think, what people want, right? We want the truth, and wherever it leads, we will follow.
Mm-hmm. If I can add to that, Janice, Nicole is exactly right on that. And that's the way we've been conducting this. We'll be putting out facts. But, you know, I sit on the Intelligence Committee and have for 10 years. And even before COVID hit, I took a special interest in bioweapons of our adversaries, China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, etc. COVID very much highlighted this and the capabilities. And so we were looking at origins, because when you understand that you have the capability of creating new viruses unnaturally in a lab, it's very concerning, and what can be done with that as far as a bioweapon. So the Intelligence Committee had a report on origins 2 years ago. And what this committee is doing, and further investigations on the intelligence side, we will be putting together a new one at the end of this term on the intelligence side as well. But some of that will be classified, as you might imagine. So the work continues on fronts. Mm.
Thank you both so much. You know, you've come on the podcast a couple of times now. You know, you've taken time out of your busy day, your busy work, to talk to me. And I am just so grateful. Like, I sometimes I lose faith a little bit. But, you know, when I see the good work that you are doing, it does bring some hope to our families. So I thank you, Chairman Wenstrup and Congresswoman Maliotakis, for being with me today. And I have to admit, I did ask if I could be somehow in the building when you're interviewing Andrew Cuomo, and your staff was very kind and said, no, Miss Dean, I'm sorry, you can't be there. but hopefully you'll get some good answers.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah, we appreciate your work too, Janice. Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks to you both. Thanks again to Chairperson Brad Wenstrup and Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis for joining me today on the podcast. And for all of you that have followed my family story over the last 4 years, let me tell you how grateful I am for your support, your kindness, and your encouragement. I often think of the quote from Benjamin Franklin when he said, "Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are." And I feel that now more than ever, if we want accountability or answers to some of the tragic decisions that were made during COVID, then we all have to stand together and make sure we're all being heard. Thank you to all of my listeners. If you have someone you think should make the Dean's List, let me know at Janice Dean on Twitter or Janice Dean FNC on Instagram. Or you can rate this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.